is up, everyone? Welcome to What the Fantasy. I am Brandon at Hey B3.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Zada Kantabedian at ZCantsFF, and I'm fired up for another show tonight, but I need a vacation. I need a Maui, Hawaii vacation, cocktail in hand kind of vacation. Brandon, I know you agree with me there.
Let's go. Let's go. We'll go. The first time we meet will be in Maui. I think that's perfect.
I haven't been there. Have you been there yet?
No, but I would love to.
Have you been to Hawaii yet?
I have not. Have you?
Oh, man. Once. My fiance is from there, and we went to Oahu, and we went to Big Island, and we went to Maui, and it's all good food and all good drinks and good vibes. So fun. So much fun.
You would love it. That sounds amazing, and I love the energy you're bringing tonight, because this is, as everyone can see on the screen, episode 20. Episode 20. We made it. We made it to episode 20. We made it through most of them, and unlike all the NFL, where people are having to sit out because of COVID, we're here to stay.
Right. That came. It was a long season, but episode 20 came pretty fast, man. It's got 20 episodes. What did we even talk about this year? What happened?
I know. It seems like I don't even know what we were doing most of them. For a while, the episodes were really long until we shortened them a little bit. So
yeah.
So episode 20. Let's chat real quick. What are your plans for Christmas?
Going to hang out with my crazy Armenian family, like all 8,000 of us, where everybody just smokes cigarettes and drinks coffee and drinks alcohol and barely anybody eats. And then we're going to do the white elephant gift exchange. So that's going to be complete chaos. Somebody's probably going to come in with COVID. So probably we're all probably leaving with COVID. So it's going to be a shit show.
Is there a limit on the presents for the white elephant?
No, it's a $50. Yeah. It's a $50 limit, and I haven't bought anything yet. So I'm trying to figure out what do you think is a good thing to buy for a white elephant present? Like, what's a fun thing?
Do you want to go like funny and like not useful, or do you want to do something that people are going to like?
Something like, yeah, useful that people are going to like. I was thinking about like getting $50 worth of donuts and just like putting them in a box and just having $50 worth of donuts, or buying like, tickets to Magic Mountain right now are worth $40. So buy somebody one ticket to Magic Mountain so they can go buy themselves to Magic Mountain, because who does that? Here's one. Yeah. Have fun by yourself. That'd be kind of fun, actually. Just like on the pictures on the roller coasters by yourself.
That would be. I would do that. That sounds like a good idea. I know a lot of the white elephants I've been to, a lot of the presents that get like taken immediately or anything that are like gift cards or like lottery tickets, like scratch offs. I've seen that a bunch.
That's a good idea. $50 worth of lottery tickets.
Yeah. I know it's too late to do this, but what would have been hilarious if you put 100 tickets in there, but only 50 of them are like real tickets, like the other 50 are fake. And then they just have to scratch off all of them to see like which ones are real and which ones are fake.
How do I get fake tickets?
I don't know. I'm sure you can make them somewhere. I saw an episode of Family Guy where that happened. So I'm sure you can figure something out.
Oh, yeah.
It might be too late. That might be something you do in the future. It might be too late to do that for this holiday. Yeah. But that sounds fun. It sounds a lot more crazy than what I'm just going over to my parents' house. They'll have presents. We'll eat a nice brunch. We'll probably take a good nap.
That's more my style, man.
So, mostly that.
That sounds very nice. That's more my style. My family's crazy, but like by the time I'm leaving, I'm like, God. All right.
Is your fiance going to come with you?
Oh, yeah. My family loves my fiance more than they love me.
Sounds good. So
I love her.
So, yeah. So let's get into it. I feel like there's not a lot of content now. You did that. We're in the playoffs, but just some stuff that happened in the NFL. We'll just kind of chat about it. First of all, I know you're a Chargers fan, so I wanted to ask you, how did you feel about Staley going for it on fourth down so many times against the Chiefs? Yes or no?
Yes, I do. I do agree with that. That's fine. You're playing the Chiefs. Go for it. Get your W. Take the risk. If I was a coach, that's how I would coach. You know, we've seen so many teams play against teams like, you know, Tom Brady was on the Patriots or even now on the Buccaneers or, yeah, against Mahomes, drive down the field, you know, spend 6 minutes driving down the field, get down there, stall out, and kick a field goal. And listen, if your offense is not capable of putting up points with any of those, with either like these high, any of these high powered offenses, then what's the point of, what's this 3 points? It's not going to do anything really in the long run, in the end of it. You know, I haven't looked at any studies, but this is just like the way I'm thinking about it. If your offense can't put, if your offense can keep up, yeah, take the 3 points. You know, but well, I'm describing with, yeah. So it sounds like I'm talking myself into, it sounds like the argument I'm making is actually disagreeing with the original point I made about how I agree with him. So he probably, the way I'm thinking now is, yeah, I think he should have taken the 3 points because I originally said he shouldn't have taken the 3 points and should have just, or, you know, or punted it away on fourth down. But now I'm thinking, yeah, because the Chargers offense, I'm just now reworking my entire argument. Because the Chargers offense has the firepower, has the talent to keep up with the Chiefs, they should have punted it away and they should have taken the field goals. So yes, I disagree with that, but I feel like you gave both arguments.
So I like that. Yeah. I will say I don't have a problem with it probably the first couple times, but when you like fail like the second time, I think it's time to start like not doing that. But then I don't agree either with the people saying, well, if they kicked the field goal, you know, kick this field goal, then they would have won in regulation. Because you don't know, like, the whole game flow might have changed. The Chiefs might have scored a touchdown, another touchdown later or something like that. So it's hard to go by that. But, I mean, he's sticking with what he does. He's gone for it on fourth down a bunch. A lot of them were very unlucky, you know, some tip passes, some, you know, weird things. I would think most times they make those plays, but going for it that many times and not getting points out of it was pretty crazy because they outplayed the Chiefs for most of that game, but they let the Chiefs hang around. So, and then, you know, Travis Kelce just showed, you know, what a monster he is. And I really hope he is off of the COVID list because that's definitely going to kill a couple of my teams that had buys last week.
Well, congratulations on making it into the playoffs anyways. I mean, some of us didn't make it into the playoffs, but I'm glad you got a couple teams that squeaked through, man. That's cool.
You didn't make it in the playoffs at all?
Nope. I made it to the playoffs, but didn't make it past the first round.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I have some of that too. So
yeah.
And next is, well, I said put that, you know, the Chris Godwin injury, which sucks for the Buccaneers, sucks for him. I really like Chris Godwin, and he was about to cash in. So who knows what that means for next year and the year after. He's probably going to stay with the Bucs, maybe win a, you know, some sort of deal. And then just Tom Brady with the Bucs against the Saints. They just have his number, and that destroyed me too. That game, both sides, very little scoring. I don't know how the Saints won with Alvin Kamara only having like 20 total yards. That was just a really weird and very boring game to watch.
Yeah, I guess it like really depends what your taste in football is. And I'm sure very few people's tastes are what that game was. I think if you like defense, then yeah, that's going to be a really well. I mean, I could watch that game again, but like watch it on the coach's tape on Game Pass, just so you can kind of break down the defensive schemes that were involved in shutting down Tom Brady. Because I'm sure a lot of teams going forward, I know we're talking about Chris Godwin, but real quick, I'm sure a lot of teams going forward are going to look at what the Saints did and try to apply that with Tom Brady. Now, especially that they don't have Chris Godwin and probably Mike Evans for another game. I'm not sure Mike Evans' practice report and what the anticipation with him is. They are supposed to get Antonio Brown back. So does Chris Godwin's injury hurt that team? Yes, it does. He's a very talented player. Do they have players that could step up? Yes, they do. They have players that can step up. They have players that are somewhat reliable. Breshad Perriman, we saw him break out. We saw him get a game-winning touchdown a couple of weeks ago. Bruce Arians, when Breshad Perriman was with the Bucs, he does know how to game plan Breshad Perriman. Breshad Perriman is a game breaker. I don't think there's many other players that could, you know, have that, that has a breakaway speed like Breshad Perriman does on that team. I think they're going to be fine. I think they'll figure out how to, you know, they'll get Gronk going a little bit, you know, and it should work out. Now, what I'm concerned more about is their run game without Leonard Fournette. I mean, Leonard Fournette was like, he was their bread and butter, I think, and he wasn't really discussed that he was that guy who got those really tough yards. And, you know, he saved the game planners a lot of energy in having to scheme these short little passes. You know, he was a really, really great outlet for cheap yardage, you know, as the checkdown option in that Bucs offense.
And I think another thing is, for some reason, Arians and Brady, I don't feel it trusts Ronald Johnson, or, you know, Ronald Jones. So, yeah. Rojo. And they Brady definitely trusts Leonard Fournette, you know, with those, because I mean, they started the game where I think Fournette got three of the first passes just on little swing routes. And it kind of moves. Well, I saw that they signed Le'Veon Bell, and because Vaughn got in the game and Brady threw him like a floating pass and he dropped it. And you saw the look on Brady's face, pretty much like, you're not going to play again. It was it's so hilarious. It's same thing like happens with like Aaron Rodgers when players drop a pass, or when Peyton played. When you don't make that first play when you're on the field, you just have to make that first play, you know. And when you don't, it's kind of hard to do. And even as good as Brady is, they kind of talked about this on the broadcast. What the Saints did is they took away a lot of those middle short to intermediate routes and made Brady throw the deep passes. And as good as Brady is, any quarterback, if you make him continually have to throw perfect passes, you know, 30, 40 yards down the field, it's not a really sustainable thing to do.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you there. It's going to be interesting to see how that offense evolves. I think they're, for the most part, they'll be all right, you know, considering who's on that team. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think, you know, we always get trapped into this kind of mentality where we see a team perform a certain way for a week. And I think all of us are guilty of it, where we become entrenched in what we saw and expect that going forward. I think it's really reflective in the way people bet in the following weeks. You see a lot of people betting based on what happened the previous weeks or the previous 2 weeks, when the NFL and teams, for the most part, like the vast majority, most teams are always evolving and changing, and they're always adapting to which personnel they have, you know? So, and I think this is what's imperative for teams that want to be winning teams to understand how to morph around what talent they have. And that's, you know, that's common sense when it comes to understanding football as a fan or a player or a coach.
No, I agree. And also they lost the Saints last year in the regular season. They still won the Super Bowl. So, I mean, it's not going to stop them. And also it helps them because they're going to stay within the top, because the Cardinals, as we'll talk about them in a couple minutes, they just are falling apart right now. Actually, let's go ahead and talk about them. So the Cardinals lay an egg versus the Lions. Everyone thought, you know, they've had some, you know, rough times, injuries. They would get right against the Lions. The Lions controlled that all game. We saw that, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is out for the rest of the regular season. They're hoping that he might possibly come back in the playoffs. They just looked horrible all the way around. The Lions just moved the ball on them. Kyler Murray had a couple interceptions, and you know, the last couple seasons when the Cardinals have been good, Kyler Murray has kind of, you know, had a downward trend near the end of the season. And also, whenever DeAndre Hopkins misses games, he's an average quarterback. It's a trend that, you know, when he has D-Hop, he's amazing, but when he doesn't. And I don't know if that's all Kyler or if it's just Cliff Kingsbury is an average offensive coach and DeAndre Hopkins just raises that. It might be a little bit of both, but I think that Cardinals team, everyone thought, you know, they would be the number one seed. They're definitely falling pretty fast right now.
Yeah, I remember the odds for Kyler Murray to become the MVP was like minus 1600 or something like that before the season started. And as the season open, people were like looking to cash in really big on the people that took bets on him. Yeah. So to your point about Kyler Murray being, you know, falling off, kind of like what he's doing right now this year, like he did that last year, right? Post injury. And we're seeing him come back post injury again, this time without DeAndre Hopkins. And this all kind of goes back to how good teams, you know, morph after a couple of good games. Now they have, you know, they weren't doing too bad without DeAndre Hopkins earlier in the year. DeAndre Hopkins was missing some games, you know, so I don't think that's going to be too much of an issue. I think that they just got probably caught off guard, like most teams do when they expect to go into a game thinking that they're going to win. There's going to be easy W. You know, they were supposed to clinch the NFC. Were they supposed to clinch the NFC, I believe, with this victory? So they're like, all right, we're going to walk in here. We're going to dust these kids up. Jared Goff ain't got nothing on us. But, you know, I think this has a lot to do with also what the Lions are doing right now. The Lions all year have been playing for their coach, right? They've taken some really bad beats, but they've been consistent in one thing, and that's been playing with a lot of heart and playing for each other and playing for their coach. Now we got TJ Hockenson out, right? And this might be kind of a blessing in disguise because they're putting Amon-Ra St. Brown in the backfield. They're having him line up with tight splits. So you're seeing him. They're scheming the hell out of this guy, man. They're using him in the backfield. They're running him on like wheel routes, and the entire defense is forgetting about him. Josh Reynolds is playing a lot better, and I got to write down because I need to watch tape on Josh Reynolds because Josh Reynolds might be a nice little stash going into next year. He's playing really well. He's playing really heads-up football right now with Jared Goff. They're clicking pretty good. Now, what I also think caught the Cardinals off guard was the effectiveness of Craig Reynolds on the ground. I watched half of that game because I'm going to do a game script report, but I've been very busy. I've only gotten halfway through it. But I watched half of it through the first half, and Craig Reynolds ran all over them. Craig Reynolds ran all over them. Now, I thought Craig Reynolds was more of a fullback type, but the more I watched him, he actually profiles as more of like a traditional running back. That run game, they need to fix that if they want to win, because that run game is a serious, serious weakness for the Cardinals. So they need to address that any way they can. I don't know if it's playing less nickel on early downs and playing, you know, with heavier packages on earlier downs, but they need to adjust. Who is it? Isaiah Simmons, second year player. Maybe he needs to get better at playing against the run, but they're really struggling. You know, Craig Reynolds, like, I'm not taking anything away from them, but the Lions run game took them out. You know, Lions got a good offensive line, but you know, that's what they got to deal with going forward. Right. So, yeah.
No, that's a good point about that too, because, you know, I know the Lions they've won two games, tied one, but of all those bad teams, like, I probably take the Lions on how they play week to week. Like, there's some weeks that they get blown out, but I would say 75% of the games they are competitive. Like you said, they've gotten some bad beats. They've lost on like 2 60-yard field goals. You know, and different games like that, and they play hard, and their talent level outside of probably, you know, the Lions are not very good. But like you said, you know, with Hockenson out and Swift out, they're finding, you know, Craig Reynolds and Josh Reynolds and Amon St. Brown, that they can use them. And if you think about it, they're probably going to get another wide receiver, you would think, going into next year. So, you know, if they get a true number one, then, you know, St. Brown's at 2, Reynolds at 3, that's a pretty good, you know, little trio, you know, not the best, but it's good enough for Jared Goff. And then you put Swift in. I mean, they might eventually cut bait with Jamal Williams if they think Reynolds is, you know, can play that complimentary role and maybe save a little money. But you know, and the they just play tough, you know, and I think sometimes people kind of talk about the Cardinals can play a little, you know, a little soft sometimes. I think that's starting to come out. Like the Rams kind of took it to them, and it surprised me they weren't able to run the ball better, because Connor, you know, has looked really good. But I think the Lions just jumped on them so quickly, and then, you know, they just couldn't get it all back together. So it'll be interesting if they start to fall. So, like, you know, say they don't win their division and end up a wild card team. After they start out to that hot start, you know, wonder if the you know, Cliff Kingsbury seat will get a little hotter because they have all that talent.
Right. Yeah. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens with them. You know, and they also had Chase Edmonds come back into the lineup. And who knows how that might have affected things, because they were pretty – you know, they had the run game solid with Connor there. And, you know, Chase Edmonds came back and the run game was pretty much non-existent. But we'll see.
Right. So a quick one too. I did not know Duke Johnson was on the Miami Dolphins. So
neither.
So I'm looking at the, like, you know, usually I watch Red Zone, or last week I watched the Jaguars game because Urban was gone and wanted to see what they did, and they didn't disappoint in being bad. So anyway, and I was looking at ESPN, it just kept on saying D Johnson touchdown. I was like, who is D Johnson? I was like, it's not David Johnson. He's in this game right now. And I looked, I was like, Duke Johnson. So, you know, all I really have to say is this is just another way. I mean, I know he had a good game, but for him just to play like get that many snaps like this late in the season without playing before, it just doesn't make sense to me. Like, it's just a thing where coaches, I feel like sometimes just start playing, you know, random players, you know, at near the end of the season just to stick it to like all the fantasy players.
Yeah, and I think like with that Miami backfield, I think we should have learned that. It sounds like you had Myles Gaskin on a couple teams last week, huh? That was
good. Well, I thought I played him, but I didn't. Okay. So I was happy about that. I really thought I did. But, I don't understand what Miami does with that backfield. Like, they don't play Myles Gaskin, and then they start playing Myles Gaskin, and then, like, this week out of nowhere, they play Duke Johnson, and I promise you people are going to pick up Duke Johnson for this next playoff week, and he's going to get, like, two carries. It's insane.
Yeah, Flores is very much he's a game flow kind of specific guy. He plans specifically for each game, and we've seen that in what Myles Gaskin does. He's very volatile as a fantasy football player. Duke Johnson, he earned reps going into games in the future. You know, he but it was the Jets. So how much stock were you gonna put into this? You know, it was the Jets. The Jets gave up so much yards per play, per game, to every position, so much more than any other team does in the league. So, sure, he played well. Who are they playing this week? Who are the Dolphins playing this week? Do you know?
I don't know.
Let me see real quick.
Great analysis by me. I don't know who they play.
I mean, but also at the same time, like, as fantasy football players, like, we have to understand that there are teams that you just need to stay away from as far as certain positions go, right? Like, we've seen through, you know, 15 weeks of the season so far that you can't trust that backfield, right? And no matter how tempting a matchup is, you can't trust it. You can't trust it. You can't trust the backfield. So the Dolphins have the Saints this week. Let's see what Duke Johnson does this time, right?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, because that's going to be tough.
That's if that's not enough incentive for you to not play Duke Johnson, I don't know what is, because that team just shut out Tom Brady and they already have had a historically good run defense. So good luck to you. If you got Duke Johnson, you must be very desperate. I hope it works out for you. It's not, but I hope it does.
Yeah. The last quick hitter. I was very surprised by how well Tyler Huntley played against the Green Bay Packers, especially how he kind of came back and, I wanted to get your opinion on, I mean, who knows if Lamar misses another game, but based on, you know, he played fairly well, I think, another game this season, or he actually almost came back against the Browns and then he played well against the Packers. Do you think he is warranted for someone to take a chance on him to be a starter? I do know that he can't go through free agency next year because I don't remember what it's called. But the Ravens pretty much have rights. If they give him a contract, they get him. So it would have to be through a trade. But do you think he should get a chance? And also, do you think a team will try to make a trade to, you know, have him as a starter?
Yeah, I think teams will. I think, you know, you have plenty of teams out there. Nothing is in stone as far as Russell Wilson being a free agent goes, or, you know, talking himself out of, or you know, like Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson becoming available. Nothing is set in stone. And even if they do sign on to other teams, there's plenty of other teams that need a quarterback. We were just talking about one of those teams, Lions, right? You know, Jared Goff has played really good, but I think, you know, it's completely viable that they bring in Huntley to be a backup to Jared Goff or compete with Jared Goff in the offseason. If he stays, say he does stay with Baltimore, is he kind of a threat to Lamar Jackson going forward? Is he kind of that guy that's always there if Lamar Jackson has a bad game? They're going to pull Lamar Jackson and they're going to put in Huntley to play. If not, I see Lamar Huntley, even in good games, you know, getting some snaps in the backfield. He played well, man. He's playing good. You know, he's not really, he can't take all the blame. I'm not going to sit here and act like I watched all his snaps. I didn't, but that defense is in shambles. If that defense was any good, they would have probably won that game. If Lamar Jackson played, they would have definitely won that game, I think. But Huntley, yeah, I think he's earned a shot to go and compete for a starting position. Washington, I think he'd be great with the Steelers. You'd want a quarterback like down the Steelers behind a really leaky offensive line. So I think, yeah, Huntley would be a good fit over there. So, yeah, I definitely think he earned it. I'm definitely, along with Josh Reynolds, I'm going to watch Huntley snaps and see how he did. I'm really, really fascinated to see how he did.
And also, just before we move on, I want to say the Ravens are very proactive and progressive in how they kind of play. And they are smart because they have Lamar Jackson. They put this offense around him. And they found a quarterback that if Lamar gets hurt, they don't have to change the offense. And I think they didn't miss much running the ball from the quarterback position with Huntley. You know, he's athletic. He's fast. Passing, you probably didn't see as much. But, you know, I watched most of that game. And, you know, it's not like Lamar always, like, blazes, you know, passing the ball accuracy-wise. I thought he played well enough, you know, passing the ball. And I didn't necessarily like the play they had on the two-point conversion with Mark Andrews there, because everyone knew it was going to Mark Andrews. I would have had, you know, a different kind of – I hate when they roll out to one side because it cuts off, you know, the other half of the field. And, you know, you were able to move the ball down the field so quickly. Without that, I wouldn't have done that. But, yeah, he's definitely a very interesting person. And, you know, like I said, the Ravens are smart because, you know, other teams – kind of like, you know, the Cowboys, they had, like last year, they had Dak and then they had Dalton, which those are two different, you know, quarterbacks, because Dalton doesn't have the mobility that Dak has. So it kind of changed, you know, the offense. So whenever you have that, you have to change the offensive scheme. So I think, you know, the Ravens are always smart with their player development and everything like that. So moving on, next, just want to talk about each of us give three players that, you know, were drafted high, that were busts or did not provide, you know, the return expected, and, you know, not including players that have been, you know, injured all season. Right. So I'll go first with one, DK Metcalf. I thought he was going to have a huge season. I don't know what's going on with Russell Wilson. I'm guessing it's something with the finger because he's a shell of himself and DK can't get the ball, and I just don't know what's going on with that whole Seahawks team. So, you know, DK Metcalf is definitely one that has fallen way below what we thought he would do.
Yeah, I think Russell Wilson's finger is just still completely jacked up. And did you see the underthrown ball that he broke out? He had like 3 yards on Ramsey on that, you know, on that go. Yeah, it's, I think Russell Wilson's just like completely shot or his finger's hurt. And I'm pretty sure it's the latter where his finger's just not working right. I think that whole team just fell apart as soon as, you know, that's it. Just took one finger, part of a finger to completely derail the team's entire season. Fascinating. Fascinating how thin the margin is, right? How thin the line is for things to completely fall apart, right? And this goes back to our conversation we were just having. The value in Huntley, right? Being in Baltimore. Baltimore retaining Huntley. Lamar Jackson comes off. Everything is still on schedule. Everything is still on schedule, right? It's very important. My first person is Antonio Gibson. I brought him up last week, but I'm going to say it again. Antonio Gibson, really like him as a running back. Thinks he's a very skilled athlete. I think he's got all the traits to be a great running back. It's not through any fault of his own, although he does lead the league in fumbles this year, I believe. However, we set our sights high. We set our hopes and dreams for Antonio Gibson high, and that was reflected in his ADP, which had him going in the back of the first, beginning of the second round. I took him in the beginning of the second round in redraft leagues. I did it on the assumption that he was going to get, you know, 60% plus running back share when he was getting, that was contrary to the fact he was getting sub 60, like low mid 50s, 54% running back share. And you don't want that from your, or you don't want that from the guy you take that early. So what lesson did I learn? Don't, you know, if you're that kind of aggressive drafter, go ahead and base off your assumptions. But I think going forward, taking into consideration the coach, I need to start adjusting my hopes and, you know, what I expect, my expectations of a player going forward. So Antonio Gibson was that guy for me.
Yeah, that's very – I mean, I was high on him too. He hasn't been, like, as bad as DK, but definitely he's not giving you that return. And he just seems to get hurt so much, you know, little nicks and everything. And that's probably partially because, you know, he didn't play running back in college. And also the thing with Ron Rivera, he's always, you know, split running backs, but they've been good running backs like Jonathan Stewart and D'Angelo Williams. So you figured that Antonio Gibson and J.D. McKissic, you thought McKissic was just like a third down back, but he's not because they give him goal line carries, which does not make any sense. But regardless, so I definitely that hurt too. And a player I have is Nick Chubb. I took him first round in a couple of redraft leagues. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been – I mean, that whole offense, you know, and team – been injured. He's been fine, but he's not giving you those big games that you expect a first round player to give you. And, you know, like this past game, I think he like 60 yards and a touchdown, which is fine, but you're expecting, you know, especially with Kareem Hunt out, him to get over 100 yards, get one or two touchdowns. And he just hasn't been providing that. And, you know, that whole offense has not provided the return that, you know, in the progression that we thought it would just because of injuries and just not meeting expectations.
Yeah, and imagine if Nick Chubb wasn't as good as he was by himself in an offense that offers nothing, that scares no defenses at all. I mean, he's like he's like one of the leaders, top two or top three, and like evaded broken tackles with nothing. I mean, they know that they're running it all the time with Nick Chubb, and he still is productive. Imagine if he wasn't Nick Chubb. I mean, he didn't return value. He's one of my first round picks in one of my drafts, and you know, you don't feel horrible going into it, but also you just wish that he was utilized more in other facets of the game. My second person is not as high. He was in a first or second round pick, or maybe not even third round pick in some conversations. But my second guy is Robert Woods. Man, Cooper Kupp and Matt Stafford are just in love with each other. Robert Woods, you know, I think he's an awesome, awesome possession receiver. I think he can do just as many good things. You know, he can be just as great, but he's just completely like over here. He's that person at the party that nobody wants. I don't know. Like it just didn't work out. I wrote an article on the Rams about how their depth of target was really, really low last year with Jared Goff, and that would increase their efficiency and their value of their targets would go up because Jared Goff was gone and Matthew Stafford was in. But man, I mean, nobody could have just expected this. Cooper Kupp getting, you know, 10 plus targets a game, at least 8 targets a game, you know, being the overall wide receiver one on the year. And just, you know, even in a Rams offense, Robert Woods was not even, I don't even think he was a wide receiver too. Like, he was barely viable as a play in fantasy. People were always just like, Robert Woods or this guy? Robert Woods or that guy? Do I even play Robert Woods? And, you know, he had like one or two games. But even if he was still healthy, I'm not sure we would have seen him be relevant. So I don't think that's going to change next year either. I think it's going to be all Cooper Kupp, Matthew Stafford. I don't know. Maybe Matthew Stafford glommed on a Kupp because it was first year there and he was just kind of feeling insecure. I don't know. Maybe it's because Matthew Stafford has always predominantly thrown it to one guy when he had Calvin Johnson. So that's just what his mental makeup is now, is just to hit one guy repeatedly and have one guy be the primary, big time primary beneficiary of receptions.
Yeah, like I think I said this last show, what I thought was going to happen was I thought the opposite. I thought Robert Woods would be that guy. I thought he would be the guy that Stafford was going to, you know, kind of go to, because I thought Cooper Kupp was just that, like, that short to intermediate guy, like with Jared Goff, like a bunch of, you know, short passes. And it turns out that, you know, he was only that way because of Jared Goff. Like, he can get the ball down the field a lot. So I was wrong, and that's really cost me because I passed on Cooper Kupp a lot in a lot of leagues because of my misconception. So I was really wrong there. So another wide receiver for me, he wasn't a first-rounder either. I don't know where Allen Robinson really was, but he was a wide receiver. I felt fine when I waited on wide receiver that he would still give me like borderline wide receiver 1-2 numbers because he's always has done that. He's always been consistent no matter what the quarterback. I thought with Justin Fields coming in there, you know, but Fields and him have not connected. And, you know, there's been questions if Robinson, like, really is trying that hard for the Bears. I mean, you know, that. But, yeah, he's definitely disappointed. And he you know, even before he was not, you know, out for a couple of games, he wasn't playable. You know, even though in some leagues I had to play him, I mean, you're just hoping for him to get a couple catches now, when before he was good for 6-7 catches, 90, 100 yards, you know, and a touchdown. So he was a huge disappointment this year for me.
Yeah, I think that's for everybody. Poor Allen Robinson. And I'm already hearing conversations of, you know, he's going to be a free agent next year. And I hear people already saying maybe he's not worth the money. Maybe he's just done. I don't really believe that. Also, don't believe he's in the prime. He's definitely on a downward trend, I think. But he's definitely not a bust. I mean, he can definitely, you know, be more than serviceable for a team. My third guy is Clyde Edwards-Helaire. It's just not going to happen. He's just not that guy, or it's just not that offense, I'm assuming. Even if he was in an offense that was more run-centric, which those offenses don't really exist in this today's NFL, he would not be that. He's not that running back. He just isn't. I like him a lot, but he doesn't have – we've touched on this last week. He doesn't have that burst. He's very good at manipulating linebackers. He's very good at setting up blocks. He's pretty solid in the open field. He's got some little jukes, but I just don't see him anymore as a primary down back. And for that reason, I'm out on Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He was drafted as overall RB14 this year behind Joe Mixon and above Chris Carson. David Montgomery went behind him. Josh Jacobs went behind him. James Robinson went behind him. DeAndre Swift went behind him. And Miles Sanders went behind him. I take all those guys above Clyde Edwards-Helaire next year.
No, I agree. And I thought he would have a more bounce back year. I never thought he'd be like top five, but I thought like, you know, borderline top 10. I do wonder if people would consider him a bust as much if he did not get drafted in the first round and it wasn't to the Chiefs. So say he gets drafted like late second, you know, and say you swap like Swift and him, you know, if he's on the Lions and he's putting up the same kind of numbers, I don't think people would have the same opinions, but that, you know, that is what happened. You know, people thought on that Chiefs offense that, and yeah, he doesn't have that. I think he's a good NFL running back. Like on a team, he's good. But for fantasy purposes, he can't consistently get you those big games. You're pretty much hoping he gets a touchdown if they get in close. But we've seen the Chiefs, if they're inside the five, who knows who's going to get the ball. They do shovel passes to fullbacks, to third-string tight ends. I mean, there's no guaranteed goal line carries on that team.
You're absolutely right. They will – it's far from a given fact. It's far from a given – you know, it's not going to – they're definitely not going to run it like most teams are. They're going to do something weird. They're going to, like, give it to a seagull, and a seagull is going to take it into the freaking end zone. Like, it's going to be the weirdest thing. It's just – it's rarely ever a run. They don't want to run it.
Yeah, so, okay. So, you know, since it's the Christmas season, it's Christmas in a couple of days, I thought we'd end the show on our top three choices for Christmas movies. So I'll let you go first. You don't have to do it in any order, just – give me a Christmas movie.
I grew up a lot with National Lampoon, the Chevy Chase movies, and my dad and I were big fans of that. And I think National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation was one of the best Christmas movies I grew up with a kid. It doesn't really get its due props, really, but it's just a classic movie. I love Chevy Chase in that movie. He's constantly freaking out. He's always strung out, and he's like trying to get the Christmas lights up on his house to be perfect. He's losing his mind. And it's got that Christmas vibe, but it's also hilarious as well. I absolutely love that movie.
Yeah, I love goofy kind of comedies like that just, you know, you can kind of laugh through the whole thing. So one for me is A Christmas Story, and most of it's not even because of the movie. I don't know if you know or any of the audience knows, on Christmas they play it nonstop. Like, they just play it one after another. So that's kind of like a tradition when I go to my parents' house, even when I still lived with my parents. In the background, we had that movie going like all day. So like, I won't watch it all the way through, but I'll catch like the first 30 minutes, you know, at 9 a.m. And then the next 30 minutes, like 3 hours later. And there's so many funny parts in that. A lot of parts that probably couldn't, you know, if it was released today, would not, you know, would not be allowed. like, you know, when they go to the Chinese restaurant, you know, and all those different things that people would have problems with. Yeah. But I think it's hilarious. You know, everything in that, I think, is really, really funny. So that's definitely a classic for me.
Yeah, I actually went to somebody's house last week who had the leg lamp. I didn't know they actually had that, dude. How cool would it be to have that lamp? That's so sick. It's so iconic. My second Christmas movie is, it's not really considered a Christmas movie, but I'm a big Bill Murray fan. Scrooged with Bill Murray, I think, should be thrown into that genre of Christmas movies. It's almost like more of a horror movie at some points. You know, I was scared to watch the movie as a kid. But, I mean, these are movies that Christmas movies are they're the movies we grew up with, right? Like, so, yeah, I think Scrooge is definitely one of them. I just, when I think of Christmas movies, I think of times that, for some reason, it's about the movies that my dad and I watched. My mom never watched Christmas movies. My dad and I were big fans of Christmas movies. So, yeah, so I think of all the movies I grew up with and, like, just my childhood, because when you think Christmas, you, for some reason, I feel like childhood and that like innocence of like just joy and, you know, waking up on Christmas morning, because it always feels like that no matter where you are, right? So that's kind of the sentiment that it brings to me. So Scrooged, not for like the acting or anything, but just the sentiment alone, just Scrooged, just a funny movie as well too.
Yeah, before I go into my second one, I kind of just like, when I came up with this, I just Googled like Christmas movies and looked at some. And there's a lot of them that, like, I didn't even realize they classified them as Christmas movies. And there's one where it was, like, horror. They had a section of horror Christmas movies. But uh-huh. And then there was a lot of movies that, like, you know, I didn't even realize. I guess technically they call it Christmas movies if there's a Christmas component at all in the movie. Right. And some of them, it didn't, you know, one of them that popped up was Edward Scissorhands.
What? I haven't seen that movie.
Oh, you haven't?
No.
Well, I've seen it a couple times. I never thought, but I mean, I guess there is some Christmas parts in it. So, but anyway, my second one is from the Home Alone, you know, franchise. I go with Home Alone 2 in New York. That was my favorite one. The little recorder type thing he had. They sold that, and I remember I got that for Christmas one year, and I was like so excited. I just loved that movie when I first visited New York. I you know, any of the little landmarks that he went to, I tried to go to. Cool. You know, yeah, I just really liked that movie.
That's funny. Yeah, I've always wanted those things. I always wanted to like do the thing at the hotel, see if I can get a fake hotel or get a hotel room. I'm sure so many kids are like, dude, I gotta get a hotel room.
Yeah, definitely.
My favorite and my third final Christmas movie is Home Alone 2's counterpart, Home Alone 1. I mean, I still laugh. I still laugh my ass off at that in that movie. I think it's one of the most hilarious movies in that movie. And you know, Howard Stern was not Howard Stern. Who is the guy with, what's the actress that, well, the sticky bandit with the curly hair? Daniel Stern? Was it Daniel maybe. Stern?
I don't know. I know who you're talking
Anyways,
about.
Yeah. Dude, that guy got the worst, but I mean, I love that movie, dude. Like, it just had a lot of heart, you know, and it was, God, we were on a vacation one time in San Diego. It was summer, and my cousin and I watched Home Alone 2 18 times in like 3 days. We rented that movie 18 times. I'll never forget that. I love that movie. Like I said, I was laughing. I always laugh the part where Marv is climbing up the stairs and he... when he just like steps on the nail and like his sound, like the sound of his scream, even in Home Alone 2, where he goes and he like tries to turn the water on because he's got like shit in his face or something. I forgot what it was. And he just like gets electrocuted.
Yeah. It's like looking back at like all the like things in there. It's so ridiculous.
Bricks, dude, the bricks, just like getting nailed with bricks. I still laugh at that movie. Yeah.
Did the door and then the flamethrower like set his head on fire. It's just
exactly.
It's never fails. That's funny. So my last one. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's a Jingle All the Way. Have you ever seen that?
I've heard of it. I've probably seen it all. I've seen it.
Yeah. So it's Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sinbad are like the stars in it.
Sick world we're living in. Sick. Yeah, I've seen that. Turbo Man.
And Turbo Man, and it's just It's just so hilarious. I just think it's so, so funny. And I actually like a lot of those, like, you know, Kindergarten Cop and all this stuff with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. And Sinbad when he was in First Kid Disney movie. Another one of my favorites. But yeah, Jingle All the Way, because it kind of just like, it's a movie that kind of makes fun of like the whole Christmas, you know, everyone getting so intense at Christmas, having to get the toys and pushing people out of the way to get the toy for the kids or waiting for the last minute to go Christmas shopping. And there's so many, you know, funny parts in that. And yeah, I just love that movie. So that's the number one for me.
Will you be watching a Christmas movie on Christmas Eve with your wifey?
Yes. I'm not sure which one when I used to go over to my parents' house on Christmas Eve, we would always watch the Jim Carrey Grinch movie, but I don't know what we'll watch this year. I know we watched a Christmas movie last year. I actually think we watched one of those, you know, corny Netflix ones. We just went on Netflix and searched Christmas and watched one of those.
Right. Yeah, I think Jingle All the Way is a good call this year. I think I'm kind of down for Jingle All. That's more my style. I think my fiance will pick something like Miracle on 34th Street, like a classic or something like that. So I don't know. I'm alright for whatever. But I think I'm down for a what's it called? A Christmas movie on Christmas Eve. But go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say I still can't sleep on Christmas Eve.
Because you get like super excited
as a grown adult. Like I know, like, you know, it's not even like gifts or anything. It's just when I was a kid, I never could sleep. Like my parents hated me because like I just wouldn't sleep and like I wouldn't stay in my room. So like my dad like had to like stay in my room and I would be like just sleeping like 5 minutes and then be like, is it time? So I've done that my whole life.
No matter what happened, I never caught Santa. The presents were always there under the tree every single morning, every single time. I would say I'm gonna get him, and I never caught him. And the son of a bitch always got the trees, the fucking presents under the trees. I could never catch him. The cookies would always be gone. I failed at that. But this year, I'm starting to do a Christmas. So. This is kind of like a downer. I hope it's not too much of a downer, but in my area that I live in, we've had a very large influx of homeless people start to move in, and it's risen a lot, especially during COVID. And I think a lot of people have taken, you know, they're receiving a lot of flack. And it's kind of like, it's this new thing that people are having to deal with, this homelessness, you know, this homelessness crisis. But I think people are starting to come around to it. Like now they're starting to have more empathy for them. They're starting to accept them as part of the community. They're like, look, this is just this crazy kind of, you know, effed up world that it is sometimes. You know, sometimes there are, you know, there is suffering and we can't get mad at it. We have to empathize it. We have to try to, you know, heal it through empathy. There was just a sock drive, you know, for, you know, in our community, somebody at their house had a sock drive where they're collecting socks. So I think this year I'm going to start, I think I'm just going to go to McDonald's and just get like 10 or 20 breakfast meals I can get and just drive around and just because they all hang out like in this one industrial part of town, which is like 10 minutes away from my house. So I think I'm just going to go and try to hand out as much food as possible to these guys because they all have like stories, right? Like they all have like their own story of how they got this way. And I think a lot of them came from like broken homes and, you know, weren't, you know, they went through some pretty traumatic stuff. So, you know, they ended up in like really tough positions. So I think like I want to make it a tradition where every Christmas morning I can get up, you know, and just go do this one thing, even if it's like once a year. Like my uncle, when I was young, my uncle worked in downtown LA, and downtown LA has always had poverty. There's always been homelessness in LA. You can walk around a corner and see a guy doing crack, like right in broad daylight. No one's going to tell him anything. But my uncle, every Thanksgiving, would get two turkeys and like two big bottles of vodka, which was probably perpetuating the problem even worse. But he would go down and there was all these homeless guys that he would know. And I remember their names, and he would go and he'd drop us. Before we went anywhere, I'd be with him and my cousin would be with him. And we'd go downtown LA and we'd hand them turkeys. And that kind of stuck with me, I think. That made an impression. But it took a long time for it to kind of kick in to now, like, I think we're starting to have, like, I'm 39 years old right now. I think it's starting to have an effect where I'm like, okay, let's start to, like, try to make it a better place. So I think that's going to be, like, a new thing I do going into this year. So
yeah, I don't think that's a downer. I think that's great. Yeah. And I know in high school and a little bit in college, what I did was a lot of the Toys for Tots, you know, where we bring presents to, you know, the homes where they couldn't give, you know, Christmas toys to their kids. And some of those were very heartbreaking because we'd go into a one bedroom apartment and there'd be like a family that had like six kids living in there, you know, and everything. And even the Christmas list of the kids, it was like heartbreaking too. It was like a pair, like these are kids, you know, that would, you would think want toys, but they just want like a pair of shoes that don't have holes in them or, you know, a toothbrush or stuff like that. So it really puts things in perspective. And I don't know if you have this out because you're talking about homeless, homeless people. We have around our neighborhood, there's, you know, it's a pretty nice area, but there's like a Walmart and a Target. And we've seen a lot of people out there, you know, that say they're homeless and everything, but we've seen some people and then they walk to like this very expensive neighborhood and go home. So so that's the part that's always just so hard to, you know, I know my wife always says, you know, look at their clothes. They're not home. You know, usually if I have a couple dollars, I'll give it anyway, because I'm like, all right, you tricked me, you know, for $5, you know, I mean, you know, you got me. I mean, I hope it was really worth it standing in, you know, the heat all day. But, you know, that's always a thing. And something my dad always did, because he works in downtown Jacksonville, kind of like you're saying, where there's a lot of homeless people that are on drugs or whatever. And they would ask for money and he would never give them money. But he would always say, if you'll come here with me to like McDonald's or whatever restaurant, he was like, I'll buy you whatever you want to eat. And a lot of them would not take it. Some would. Yeah. You know, it's one last story in college, it was funny. We'd go to the same gas station and there's some homeless people out there and they would always ask for money. But there's one guy, he was like, I'm just going to tell you, I just want some money so I can get some beer. So I had already just bought like a 12 pack. I gave him like two beers. I was like, I'm giving you these two beers cause you're honest with me and I respect it. So
If they're honest. Yeah. If you're honest, it's a whole different thing. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, so, definitely. So I think that's the show. So, you know, everyone, good luck if you're still in the playoffs, and good luck filling rosters with all these positive COVIDs. Don't think it's going to stop. And, you know, then everyone have a, you know, Merry Christmas or Happy Holidays to, you know, whatever you celebrate. So we'll talk to you guys next week.
There you go.